Hello, this is Kyle Jones with the Fullness of Meaning Christian Ministries. We are doing a treatment on J.R. Tolkien's Silmarillion, and we are in part four of our daily devotionals to continue to exegete the ingenious nature of Tolkien's work as he reconstructed the fall of Lucifer from the Bible, from the perspective of other extant mythologies, pagan mythologies, as we look to the word pagan as being the word paganus in Latin, or which has a very awe moral term. We're not judging. This is simply pagan means over there, out of our camp, or of the camp. As we read from yesterday, Ilúvatar saw that Melkor being the devil, Ilúvatar being the godfather, or god of the waters, or just god of the people, of the Ainur, the holy ones, that Ilúvatar had set an eternal theme of music that each particular angel or Ainur would sing, and each in their own particular ratio to the fullness of Ilúvatar did the Ainur do their job or their part. Well, it was Melkor's persuasion to be as Ilúvatar, to lift himself up as Ilúvatar, and to join the ranks of creating an eternal theme. But it was also not understood by Melkor, meaning bad god or bad lord, Mel being bad, Kor meaning Lord Kurion in the Greek, that he understood that he was created, and that is a little bit deeper part of our fall, is that we as believers forget that we are created and that we have an eternal theme that we rest upon, not created by us, but of God. Though we fall into the camp, the pagan camp, as I stated earlier, that allows for us to think that we are somehow in control. But by this ingenious work of Tolkien, he's established how Satan fell and how we fall. So it was the repetitive ostinato that Melkor began to bray, getting louder with more amplitude and more velocity, but always returning to itself, a reflection onto itself, a dismal picture. That's what we kind of led up to at this point. So I will continue to read from yesterday, pick up where I left off yesterday. Then the Ainur, or the Holy Ones, were afraid, and they did not yet comprehend the words that were said to them. And Melkor was filled with shame, of which came secret anger. But Ilúvatar arose in splendor, and he went forth from the fair regions that he made for the Ainur. And the Ainur followed him. But when they were come into the void, Ilúvatar said to them, "Behold your music." And he showed to them a vision, giving to them sight where before was only hearing. And they saw a new world made visible before them. And it was globed amid the void, and it was sustained therein, but was not of it. And as they looked and wondered, this world began to unfold its history. And it seemed to them that it lived and grew. And when the Ainur had gazed for a while and were silent, Ilúvatar said again, "Behold your music. This is your minstrelsy. And each of you shall find contained herein, amid the design that I set before you, all those things which it may seem that he himself devised or added. And thou, Melkor, wilt discover all the secret thoughts of thy mind, and wilt perceive that they are but a part of the whole, and tributary to its glory." And many other things Ilúvatar spoke to the Ainur at that time. And because of their memory of his words and the knowledge that each has of the music that he himself made, the Ainur know much of what was and is, and is to come, and few things are unseen by them. Yet some things there are that they cannot see, neither alone nor taking counsel together. For to none but himself has Eluvitar revealed all that he has in store. And in every age there come forth things that are new and have no foretelling, for they do not proceed from the past. And so it was that as this vision of the world was played before them, the Ainur saw that it contained things which they had not thought. And they saw with amazement the coming of the children of Iluvatar, and the habitation that was prepared for them. And they perceived that they themselves, in the labor of their music, had been busy with the preparation of this dwelling, and yet knew not that it had any purpose beyond its own beauty. For the children of Iluvatar were conceived by him alone, and they came with the third theme, and were not in the theme which Iluvatar propounded at the beginning, and none of the Ainur had part in their making. Therefore, when they beheld them, the more did they love them, being things other than themselves, strange and free, wherein they saw the mind of Iluvatar reflected anew, and learned yet a little more of his wisdom, which otherwise had been hidden even from the Ainur. Now the children of Iluvatar are elves and men, and the firstborn and the followers. And amid all the splendors of the world, its vast halls and spaces, and its wheeling fires, Iluvatar chose a place for their habitation in the deeps of time, and in the midst of the innumerable stars. And this habitation might seem a little thing to those who consider only the majesty of the Ainur, and not their terrible sharpness, as who should take the whole field of Arda for the foundation of a pillar, and so raise it until the cone of its summit were more bitter than a needle, or who consider only the immeasurable vastness of the world, which still the Ainur are shaping, and not the minute precision to which they shape all things therein. But when the Ainur had beheld this habitation in a vision, and had seen the children of Iluvatar arise therein, then many of the most mighty among them bent all their thought and all their desire towards that place. And of these, Melkor was the chief, even as he was in the beginning the greatest of the Ainur, who took part in the music. And he feigned even to himself at first that he desired to go thither and order all things for the good of the children of Iluvatar, controlling the turmoils of the heat and the cold that had come to pass through him. But he desired rather to subdue to his will both elves and of men, envying the gifts with which Iluvatar promised to endow them. And he wished himself to have subjects and servants, and to be called Lord, and to be a master over other wills. Now I'm going to stop for right here. I think this is a fantastic place to to end. As I stated before in the synopsis of part three, we understand that it was the apportionment that God gave each of the Ainur their understanding. And we know that apportatio, the ratio, the ratio, the reason, all being the same word, we are given our particular and limited reason and gifts that we may offer to God in his eternal theme. And that is the only way that we'll make sense of anything. When we have a Christ-centered worldview versus an anthropic-centered or anthropocentric point of view, we'll never get that. We'll never understand what's going on in this world. I thank you very much for your time. I love the treatments that we're doing with J.R.R. Tolkien, which actually lead into The Hobbit and the Lord of the Rings. A fantastical experience to read J.R.R. Tolkien's works out of the mind that God has given him to reconstruct through a synthesis of myth and poetry and languages and history. Such a fantastic view of God that is only one theme, no matter what poem or mythology that you read. Well, thank you guys. This is Kyle Jones with the Fullness of Meaning Christian Ministries.